Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
There's something that's incumbent upon the individual who has decided as best he or she can to have a real life, to be a free human being, to know themselves in the divine. There's something incumbent upon that individual. And what it is the individual must learn to look at life as it is. It's so much easier said than done. We really don't want to see life as it is presently. Because for one thing, to see life as it is would be shocking. We don't see the heavy hearts in human beings. We see opportunities. We don't see the strain on the faces of the men and women that we work with or that we happen to meet walking down the hall. We see conditions to be avoided so that we can find pleasures for ourselves. We don't see the world the way the world is. We do not see the world the way the world is. We see it as a potential resource for our personal gain. That's what the world represents to human beings. So to see life as it is tough, because there is inside of us a nature that is hell-bent, determined to see only what it needs to see in order to sustain itself as it imagines itself to be. So it has its enemies. It knows its enemies, this nature. And it knows its enemies are bad. The same nature knows everything that's wrong with you, all the time talking to you about what's wrong with you. This nature knows everything about what is not right. And because of that, if we could see, which is what we're going to set out to do here, we would see that we live in a world of walking wounded. It's a world of walking wounded. Men and women rising up in the morning, trying to muster together what they need in order to meet the day that they disdain going into because they know they're going to have to fight again for what they think they need to provide themselves with. And you can see it, but see, you can't. If you looked in the mirror yourself, you would see a casualty. If you actually looked in the mirror, you would see a casualty there. How many of you know when you look in the mirror, you see yourself when you were 18 years old? When we look in the mirror, if we don't see that, then we sit and tear ourselves down for what we see. We see either what we wanted to be, what we were, or what we can't stand being. Using people. Using people to escape pain. That's what you would see. And you'd see yourself doing it. Maybe not outwardly. Did you know you use a person to escape pain when you blame them for your pain? Did you know that? To blame any human being for any pain that you have is to escape that pain through the use of that human being's image, by the way. Not even the human being. But if they get close enough, you'll use them. You'll punish them. Now, I'm starting relatively strong, because I want you to at least catch the breeze, just be willing to let what is right in front of you show itself to you. You know, if you make the connection with life, if you see it as it is, everything that needs to happen to you, that God intends to happen to you, happens to you. Because it's built into life. Life is not bad. Life is good. Life is a good thing. But human beings don't think it's good. It's only good when everything's out of the way. Then it's good. And everything that's in the way is part of what's wrong with life. And you have the walking wounded, hurting themselves and hurting one another because of the pain they're in, and never understanding, and this is the close, the first part of this talk, never understanding that what they are is a casualty of a world in which, and I'll say it in several different ways, there is a war on love. No one can see such things until they begin to realize that all they've done their whole life is try to enlist others to support them so they can get through their suffering to an imagined pleasure to come. It's all human beings do. You tell me, and this is why it's hard, and I know it's hard. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. You tell me about the love that you have. It's hard to look at ourselves. But that difficulty in looking at ourselves as we are is part of the entrapment. It's part of the being a casualty. Because we're convinced with great strength, we're convinced that we mustn't examine ourselves. That we must at all costs find that which reconciles and explains to us why we are like we are. And it never dawns on us that what we're listening to, that explains to us why we use people, why we hurt others, why we hurt ourselves, why we're greedy, why we do the things that we know are not right. It never dawns on us that that which is talking to us is not an ally, but is part of what has made us a casualty. Because there's comfort in the justification of being whatever it is we are. Because it's too difficult for the human being as he is, only having that in his mind to tell him why he is what he is. It's too difficult for that person to start to understand what it is that any human being who is going to have a life in God must come to understand. Must come to understand. What else do you think? What else do you think explains what it is that you do all day long to yourself, not knowing? You know, have you ever gotten up in the morning and you got out of bed and you were a casualty? You know what I'm talking about. You wake up, you're a casualty. Well, where was the war? And it's a war of attrition. The war on love is a war of attrition. That means that it's never an outward assault. It's never an outward assault. It's always the gradual chipping away, the gradual diminishing of it, until a person reaches a point in which, and you listen, because there's great hope where there is light. There is great hope where there is light. Where there is not light, there cannot be hope. And so the light that reveals the truth about the condition inside of the human soul relative to love and its possibilities, the light that reveals the absence of that love is the friend of that soul. It is the friend of that human being. It is not the human being's enemy. But inside of us, anything that even remotely points to that, we see it as being an enemy. Don't you dare, Sir Speaker, connect in my mind the fact of how I feel every day and how I speak to people and what I'm after. Don't you dare connect that with the absence of love in my life. Don't you put that together in me, because if you do, I will hate you. I'll resist you. I will deny it. And I'm saying that that's exactly what we have to do if we want to be different human beings. I can assure you that this war of attrition, the way it takes its casualties, is through a process in which a person, without even knowing it, you know, some of us, before we were five years old, we were brutalized and didn't even know it. Some of us did know it. And this is in no way whatsoever, and don't you dare think for a minute that I'm saying that there's any possible excuse for the way we are in this moment relative to our past. Because the past is the past, and the present moment is the moment in which it's possible for an individual to see the fact of life. See the fact of life, it changes the life that you see. And here a person grows up, and you know what happens. How many of you have been crushed? Raise your hands. Every human being on this planet has had their heart crushed. No exception. No exception. And it can only be crushed so many times.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And then that heart begins to think to itself. But then that which produces all of that, it begins to find something else to do. That's the attrition. It's like a great fire, because love is a great fire, a great beautiful fire that inside of the individual soul. Love can never die. Love can never die. It is uncreated. There's nothing that the war can do to love. Love can never die. It is uncreated. But in the human soul, that soul without love, it can wither and pass. That's a fact. And when a person starts to see and thinks, just even in the smallest way, you know, I've had moments where I thought, you know, I want to know something more about love. I know I've been through the ringer. There's no question in my mind. I've had one hope dashed after another. I've had people hurt me. But see, here's what I'm trying to say, is that then the evidence that nature goes on, that the heart collects by which to assess its own relationship with a love that it was given, the evidence is what happened to it because of the world that it was in and the people that it was in. So that by the evidence of the world around that heart, the heart draws a conclusion that this love must be somebody's pipe dream. Because you see it in the hypocrisy of religious liars and fakes. Spiritual nothings that claim to have all of this, whatever it is, and you see it and you know for a fact they're just as empty and barren as a dead cow, and you look and say, well, what is it then? If there isn't love, if these people don't and that isn't, and all I've been surrounded with my whole life is the absence of this, where am I to find something like that? And the answer is the same answer it's been since the beginning of time. And I'll say it in a number of different ways. But then we're going to talk about what's necessary, how we as individuals can begin to do what is necessary for us to do. Because how many of you know what it means to provide for yourself? Raise your hand. Hopefully everybody here, anybody listening to this, we know what it means to provide for ourselves. We weren't 12, 14, 15 years old before most of us had some kind of deal. We had to provide services to the family in order to get allowance, and then we get out, and then we got to do certain stuff to get stuff. That's all life. Providing for ourselves has to do with doing stuff you don't want to do by and large, and then getting stuff that after you've got it, you don't want anymore. Mostly. And in the world, providing for ourselves is really essential. There's really no escaping it. In fact, you find a human being that can't provide for himself. And I'll tell you something, you haven't even found a human being. You found a subhuman being. We must be able to provide for ourselves. But I want to talk about being provided for in a different way than we're used to thinking about it. Because when we think about providing for ourselves, our minds are always filled with a kind of stream of time. A mind in which sees that in order to have comfort tomorrow, in order to be at peace 2 hours from now, in order to be satisfied with what I am and have next week, I must provide for myself those things that see to it that that which I have as imagined as being comfort and security and satisfaction, that those things are in my life. That's what the mind does when it thinks about providing for itself. And I want to try and talk to you tonight about a completely different provision, about a completely different order of what it means to be provided for. Because if you could just see this thought, what good is it to provide everything for yourself that you can have a minute from now if in this moment while I'm talking to you, you have not that security, you have not that comfort, you have not that happiness, you have not that kindness. Imagine a man. He spends his life procuring, setting things up, thinking about how to get everything right so that his home and everything in it will give him what he needs. He's provided for in his home. And then he hears, as all of us hear in quotes, you know, a great storm is coming. And then you fill in the blanks for what the great storm is. You hear something about your health. You learn something about the economy. You fill in the blanks. Someone's leaving you. Someone's going to stay with you. We all have different storms. Point is this, that at the moment at which that storm comes, here's the man, and he spent all of his life getting everything provided for him in his house. And when the storm comes, he's not there. This great flood comes and he has to hide behind rocks up in a gorge someplace. And he sits there thinking to himself, what good is all I have provided for myself? Because here I have nothing. Here I'm cold. Here I'm angry at myself. Here I'm angry at the weatherman or whatever it is that a person's mind comes up with in the moment where that which he believes he provided for himself is not present for him. And I ask you, what good is that? What good is that? If I'm trying to draw a parallel for you between the physical world and the spiritual one. Trying to help you to understand that you presently are in a constant state of trying to provide for yourself based on your best ideas of what it is that you need to live with in order to be happy and content. And that when push comes to shove, when all is understood, that living state of being provided for is different than a person who thinks what he needs to have to live with. When one is provided for, really provided for in the moment, that individual knows what he does not need to. He knows what he does not need to live with. Think for a minute. Our minds are set up trying to think what we need to live with. When we're really provided for, it's clear to us what we don't need to live with. We don't need to live with fear when we're provided for. We don't need to live with anxiety when we're provided for. We don't need to think about ourselves or tomorrow when we're provided for. And I'm trying desperately to show you this difference between the relationship that we have within ourselves, where presently all that we're attempting to do in order to heal the wounds, in order to get past this casualty consciousness, has to do with trying to figure out what we need to provide ourselves with when nothing that we have provided ourselves with from that level of ourselves does one thing for us in the moment when all goes wrong. When sorrow seeps into the door like a flood waiting to get in. Nothing that a man or a woman that has provided for themselves means anything. And here's the problem. We say, but if not that, then what? And this is what's happened. This is what the war on love has produced in the human soul. The human soul has actually gotten to the point where what they think love is has something to do with something they will be safe from later. That love is something that's going to fill them when they're doing something with someone. That war on love has made love into a sensation. It's made it into an ideal. It's made it into something that serves as a bandage when there's problems for people. And love has nothing to do whatsoever with any of that. Nothing to do with any of that. Because it should be so obvious that whenever love is reliant on something that the human being says is required in order to have that love in their life, then that love is not love at all. It's a tool. It's a go-between between the person's emptiness and that which they've said will fill them, and they feel love when they think about what they'll have and become through something including the idea of that love that one day is coming to an individual. And I'm going to get off this point now. What I'm saying to you is that even though as human beings caught up in this interior war, and it is a war, even though we can't see it, even though we don't know it, there does live inside of that human being something that knows. That to be provided for means that living inside of his or her heart is that which quiets their mind. That which pacifies the waves in the ocean in that heart. That which quiets the man. That which quiets the woman. That which allows the individual to be, if you will, right where they are and have everything that the world can give them.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
That's what it means to be provided for. To know in the moment that you have everything that you could want. That's what it means to be provided for. And it isn't dependent on anything. You're not thinking about God, who's going to save you from the storm. You're not thinking about what's going to happen, where you're going to be better off than you were when you get that deal closed or you straighten out that relationship. There's not one, this is what's so impossible to explain, there's not one cause inside of you for this condition in which you are completely well. You see, it is evident that what a human being loves is what shapes that human being's life. It is evident. But we have become human beings who have found a completely different kind of love. This is the war. This is the dark seed. And listen to it, if you will, please. What we don't see is that most of our time is spent where not wanting what we have is what we love. Think a minute. Look, yes or no, what better definition is there of love than what we give ourselves to in any moment. Is that not a good definition of love? What I give myself to is what I love. What I give myself to is what I love. And I'm saying to you that the way we are now, if we look at ourselves, what we give ourselves to is a nature that lives inside of us that is always seeing something that isn't right, something that isn't in place, something that needs to be fixed, something that ought to be different than it is. That's what we give ourselves to now. How many of you can see it? Do we not give ourselves to the consideration of what we are not? Yes or no? I'm not this. I'm not that. I didn't get this. Yes or no? We give ourselves to what I am not. Do we not give ourselves to what I don't have? Come on! Absolutely. You sit there and you think to yourself, oh, she's got this. I don't have what he does. I'm never going to get what those people seem to have. I got cheated when it came to this. So here a man gives themselves to what they don't have. How about this? Do you not give yourself to at least some order of consistent thought about what it is that you're not going to achieve that you hope to in your life? When you're young, it's pretty powerful. You're going to achieve it. But as you grow older, you look back and say, I didn't, and therefore I'm not going to what I didn't achieve. And then that becomes what a person gives themselves to. I want you to look at this with me. So here's an individual, and they don't see it. This is what I'm saying. They don't see that here I am every day giving myself to what I don't want. I don't want to get up. I don't want to work. I don't want to have to talk to people. I don't want to have to make a living. I don't want to have to cook my own meals. I don't want to have to deal with this problem. So if you can see what I'm saying, we give ourselves to what is negative. That's what we give ourselves to. We love the negative. See, I watch some of you. You pushed it away. Don't you push that away. If all day long my heart and mind is consumed basically with what I wish wasn't happening, how things should be different, why it isn't right, am I a positive person or am I a negative person? Negative. The negativity lives in me. There is no I that is negative. The negativity lives in me. And if I give myself to that negativity, because the negativity is a liar and a deceiver and says that in giving myself to it, it will rectify what I don't want and I'll realize what I do want if I just worship it, if I just give my energy to it, if I'll just think along the lines that it tells me to think along. Yes or no? It says, when you're unhappy, give me your attention, doesn't it? Give me your attention, I'll help you. I know what's wrong. This person, they're just not right, but you can work it out. Over and over and again, a man, a woman goes through their life consistently doing what they don't know they're doing, which is giving themselves. Now listen to this, please. Giving themselves to what does not exist. I'm asking you, does what I am not exist? Does what she didn't do, does that exist? It exists only as an image, as an idea. And a person will spend his whole life giving himself over to, please listen, it's deep, to a nature that continues to define itself by knowing what it doesn't want. And what it doesn't want doesn't exist. Pure negativity. Pure resistance, in case it's not clear. The self that creates that which doesn't exist in the form of an image, what I'm not, only stands in any fashion by being compared to what I should have been, could have been, might have made out of myself. Take away that which doesn't exist. And how does this exist? It doesn't. It has no existence at all. And in case you're missing the point, our lives have been taken from us. The possibility, listen, the possibility of knowing that love that provides, it's been taken from us. And we give ourselves over to everything that appears inside of us that promises to change that. Now, we're talking about examining, and that's what we're doing, examining what we love. And as long as we don't know what we love, for instance, would you ever think to yourself, would you ever think, you know, I love that which is hurting me? Would you ever? No one would do that, would they? No one would see in their heart that they have an enemy, and that they think about him every day, and that every time they think about that person, that they're harming themselves and they're killing love in their heart. No one would do that, would they? You must see for yourself what I'm talking about. No one would every day think about what they don't have. When the whole idea, and this is true, the whole idea of what you don't have is a lie. There's no you the way you imagine it to possess a thing. A person spends their whole life imagining what they don't have, giving themselves over to the negative assertion that if only this could have been different, then I'd have been different. Would a person spend their life doing that? Would a person do that deliberately? Never. Never. Would a person deliberately sink into self-pity over concerns about how they didn't achieve whatever it is that their mind said they had to achieve in order to be happy? Would a person sink themselves into that kind of slop if they knew what they were doing? Never! But we have been deceived. And the deceiver lives up here. Because every time the human being embraces the problem and hates their life or worries about tomorrow or tries to figure out what they have to do to be different, they have embraced what is destroying love in them. And the proof that it's destroying love in them is that that human being then acts from something that destroys everyone they meet, because they're trying to extract something from him or from the planet that will satisfy that, which can't be satisfied because it isn't real in the first place. So you see, I'm speaking for myself. I mean this. I thank God. Thank God it is possible that a human being, that a man, can discover that he has been deceived from the inside out, and that all that he has ever hoped for is already provided for him. If he will simply stop being pushed into believing that he must provide for himself these things that have never done what they were told would do. Ever. Ever.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Because it's only then that something really extraordinary can happen, something that must happen in the human heart, which is then a person begins in such moments. You see, when we're deceived, we don't know we're deceived, and we're not. There's no fault. I'm telling you, one day, thank God, you will know this if you persist with your inner work. All the horrible things, and we have, every one of us, been a horrible creature. A horrible creature. We have stolen, we have cheated, we have lied, we have used, we have abused ourselves and every human being we've ever been in touch with, and we didn't know it. But then little by little, a person, by the grace of God, wakes up a little bit and starts to see it. And then, because of what I'm telling you, you start to understand. And this is the true meaning of forgiveness. The you that transgressed the way that all of us have transgressed isn't you. It isn't you. You spoke it. You acted it, you thought it, you felt it, but it isn't you. You didn't know. But now you're starting to know. Now you're starting to know, and it's when we start to know, when we start to see ourselves, that it's possible for us to do something that very few, if any, human beings will do, which is that we must begin in such moments to understand that when this negativity comes upon us, when it starts to define us by what we are not, what we don't have, what we won't get, what someone did that took away from us, whatever it is, in such moments to become conscious of the onset of that negative spirit. It is a negative spirit, and it has a home in you. But to become conscious, now listen, of the onset of that is the beginning of the end of its domination of the soul. And the reason it's the end of the domination of that soul is because that soul, when it starts to awaken, recognizes for its awakening that it is possible for that soul, for you, to remember in the moment and reconnect. To remember and reconnect with what it is that you want to love. This is so critical to understand. To realize that here I am, and I'm starting to sink into the mud here about what he did or what she didn't say or what wasn't right. I can see it. I feel. I start to fall down. I start to be drawn back into considering that cruel man or whatever it is. In those moments, up until now, we believed that we had to provide for ourselves some kind of protection from the pain that was inherent in reconsidering those kinds of events. So the only recourse a man has is to do what? To call on what he is given in that moment to deal with that pain, with that negative state. And if you've listened, then you understand that when the negativity sets itself in the human being, then it hands the human being more negativity by which to deal with the problem. Because the justification of darkness is an act of darkness. And then he does the thing that is necessary, that's mandated by what we're talking about. And this is what it is. We're going to call it recollect and reconnect. Recollect and reconnect. In the moment in which that darkness descends. And this is why it's personal. It's personal. It's personal. It's personal for you. You may not think that anxiety is darkness descending on you. You may not think that worry is a form of darkness descending on you. You may not think that thinking about yourself, comparing yourself to others, is a form of darkness. You may not think that talking about other people behind their backs is a form of darkness having descended on you. You may not think, how many of you ever berate yourself? You may not think that that's a form of darkness having descended on you. It is. And when darkness descends, darkness has won the fight so far, because then darkness directs. Darkness descends, and then it directs. It directs your attention onto what it needs to justify its presence in you. That's what darkness does. As it sets in, it steals your attention and uses it to place it upon everything that makes the pain you're feeling reasonable and justified. That's what darkness does. Darkness wins no more. Because in the moment where darkness takes one's attention and wants to direct it towards that which defines the moment and keeps one feeling like they're in charge of their lives, now we do what I said. We recollect and reconnect. In such moments, we remember. And I'll get right to the point. What do you think? When you think of love, do you think of something that's closed and tight, or you think of something that's open? Open. When you think of love, do you think of something that's filled with despair and disappointment, or do you think of something that has hope? When you think of love, do you think of something that's cruel, or do you think of something that's kind and extending itself? When you think of love, do you think of something that is selfish, or do you think of something that's compassionate and considerate? So here's the point, see? When you catch yourself in those moments that we're talking about, where all of a sudden you start to feel everything closing in. How many of you know the feeling, everything closing in? Thoughts start to speed up. And you start to worry about yourself. See, in those moments, that's where you do the first act. And the first act prior to this recollect and reconnect is disconnect. You disconnect. You disconnect. You disconnect yourself from it, no matter the cost. And that action of disconnect allows the possibility for a person to recollect. Because why? Because the very onset, the very negativity itself, the very self-loathing, the very self-pity, the very hatred of someone, that darkness, the onset of it, has caused a condition in which it's possible for me to recollect in that moment what I must not be. What I must not give myself to. What I must not allow my attention to be taken by. This is the point. Your attention is taken by darkness. And when it's taken by darkness, it's dragged down. And it's dragged down into a world where love doesn't exist. But fear does. And fear presents itself as your friend. It says, I love you, I'll take care of you. And that's why we're casualties, because we've made friends with fear. So in that moment, one feels that onset. There's this disconnect. That first thing, you disconnect, man, you must find for yourself, I can't possibly describe to you what it means. You yourself must catch yourself about to go into, and I'll run through these. How many of you speak badly about other people behind their backs? Raise your hand. Or in your own mind. You catch yourself speaking badly about another human being. You disconnect. And in that same moment, you recollect that this can't have anything to do with love. How obvious is that? And then after you've done that recollection of realizing that, then you deliberately reconnect. You bring yourself to the best possible approximation of what it means to love. You don't think about it. You do not think about it. Don't think to yourself about love. See, it's enough to know what isn't love. It is enough to know what isn't love in the beginning. Because you see, the divorce, the dismissal, the dropping, the disconnect of what isn't love is your indication to love that you want a different relationship. That you want truly to be a different human being. Not to just talk about being a different human being, but to be a different human being. And if it's not speaking about others, how many of you tear into yourself? talk about yourself, what a bad person you are, how stupid you are. Ever call yourself stupid? Why does that seem wise to us? In every moment like that, where you can feel, and it is a distinct feel, where you can feel the onset of inside of yourself of that which is closing up, that which is despairing, that which is justifying itself, that which is becoming cruel in its mind, cruel in its thoughts, that which is becoming aggressive, attack-like, that in those moments when that happens, and the whole point of the talk has been this, that we must recognize that what brings us to that then provides for us that which it says will save us from that, but we never find ourselves provided for in the sense of being at peace with ourselves. So we must dare to drop that. That's why I call it this disconnect followed by this idea of recollect, to recollect myself. I'm going to bring myself back. I'm going to bring myself back to what I know is true. I know that love is true. I don't know much about it, but I know it's true. I know that goodness is true. I don't know much about goodness. I've had a rough go of it, but I know it's true. See, this is what one must do. They must process this understanding until they realize what I must do in those moments for the first disconnect have nothing to do with that liar. And then recollect to remember as best I can what is right and true and good. It's that simple, but it's that hard because in the moments where a person is, as I'm describing it, being asked to recollect themselves and then reconnect themselves. And by the way, listen to this. The recollection of what is good is your reconnection to it. And the moment that the connection takes place with what is good, you're provided for by that goodness. And instead of being in the arms of darkness, being told of a tomorrow in which your problems will be resolved, you get to see the problem maker at work in you, and you get to let that light do what it's always been meant to do, which is to dismiss it. And then love. And it's not a word I use a lot when I talk. And then love comes into the heart. Love comes into the mind. It doesn't announce itself. There's no brass band. There's no promises. There's no past to it. There's no future to it. The individual into whom love comes that way because they have been willing to disconnect and recollect and then reconnect, such an individual becomes the vessel of that which he or she was put on this planet to be in the first place. But it takes a choice, and that's the whole talk. It takes a choice. You must be the one who understands what has happened. And regardless of how poor the attempt may be, I can assure you that your success is not determined by your ability, but by your willingness to step into that light that has shown you what love is not, so that you may, for your first time, begin to know what real love is.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.